Hello, and welcome to Cromford's Assortment on Thursday, the 16th of April, 2020. On this day, the 16th of April, 1705, Queen Anne of Great Britain bestowed a knighthood on Isaac Newton. This was for inventing gravity. He still had patent pending on it when she had it installed in all the royal apartments.
Citation needed.
On this day in 1932, the Laurel and Hardy film The Music Box was released, winner of an Academy Award for Best Short Subject at that year's Oscars. On this day in 1943, Swiss scientist Albert Hofmann uncovered the psychedelic properties of LSD. He tried it himself a few days later, spent the next 25 years calling himself Sid Barrett and telling everyone the eyes in his Emmental cheese were following him around the room.
Citation needed.
On this day in 1867, Wilbur Wright, one of the two inventors of practicable powered flight, was born. And on this day in 1912, American aviator Harriet Quimby became the first woman to fly an aircraft solo across the English Channel. Go, Hattie! On this day in 1889, comedian and actor Charles Chaplin was born. And on this day in 2017, to celebrate Chaplin's birthday, a world record 662 Charlie Chaplin lookalikes gathered at the Chaplin Museum in Vevey, Switzerland. Sounds as though we're wandering back into the realms of LSD to me. On this day in 1911, the English spy and traitor Guy Burgess was born. Boo hiss! Whereas, on this day in 1918, Spike Milligan was born.
Yay!
On this day in 1939... I might need to go for a lie down after this one. On this day in 1939, the great Dusty Springfield was born. Also, coincidentally, talking about voices, April the 16th is World Voice Day. I'll say that again, April the 16th is World Voice Day. So, wherever you are, whatever you're doing, look after that instrument. And in other news, the cherry blossom is out. Well, at least it is here in Buxton in Derbyshire. And that puts me in mind of an A.E. Housman poem, which is known as Loveliest of Trees, the Cherry Now. It goes, Loveliest of Trees, the Cherry Now, is hung with bloom along the bough. I like that poem so much that I once set it to music. Mind you, I monkeyed with the words a bit, because he writes about being 20 and having 50 more years of his 70 left. And I was already 50 when I set the thing to music, so I had to change it slightly. And here it is.
Loveliest of trees, the cherry now, is hung with bloom along the bough. And stands about the woodland ride, wearing white for Eastertide. Now of my 80 50 will not come again. Take from 70 springs that score, it only leaves me 20 more. look at things in bloom. 20 springs are little room. About the woodlands I will go to see the cherry hung with snow.
There's a new kind of bully out and about among us now, have you noticed? The COVID-19 emergency has brought into being the social distancing hog. You know the sort. They're walking ahead of you down a very narrow thoroughfare, as slowly as they please, and they know you're not going to come up behind them to try and get past, because you don't know what you might catch. So the world belongs to them for the time being, them and their ilk. And you know, they find the sunniest patch on the pavement to stand in, because they know you're not going to try and bump them off, because you don't know what you might catch. These people are at their worst, though, in the supermarket. Well, let's see now. I think I'll have me some bagels. A couple of Danish. Maybe a pack of tea cakes.
Excuse me.
Now, what the hell are these supposed to be? Hot cross buns. Never come across these before.
Excuse me.
What?
Are you going to be much longer? I'd like to get to the croissant.
The what?
The croissant. Just up there behind you. Are you going to be much longer?
Well, I haven't rightly made up my mind yet.
Sorry? What was that? You need to speak up. I'm all the way over here.
I said I haven't rightly made up my mind yet.
Only there aren't many packets left and I'd like to get one of them.
One of the what?
Croissant. Those things up there, look.
Oh, those little doodads. You want these?
Yes, and I can't get to them because you're,
I'm standing where you want to be.
Yes, you are. Thank you.
No need to thank me, mister. Ain't moving yet.
But you've been standing there for 11 minutes. Your basket is full of bakery products, and I do think you're being a bit unfair.
Well, I'm all broken up about that. Tell you what. You keep your frosty little ass out of my face a while longer, and maybe I can concentrate on finishing my shopping, huh?
Frosty little what? I've a good mind to report you to... Hey, what are you doing?
I'm grabbing me some of these crescent doodads you're so steamed up about.
But you're taking every packet.
Three, four. Yep, that's all of them.
In the whole shelf unit. Right. Well, that's the giddy limit. Put them back.
Hey, what the hell are you doing?
Put those croissants back.
What the hell is that?
This is a 44 Magnum, which used to be the most powerful handgun in the world, and could blow your head clean off.
Hey, take it easy, old timer. You don't want to make a wet spill in the bakery aisle.
Well, you'd better ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky?
Jeez. Okay, fella. I'm putting them back. I'm out of here. Hell. I only came in for some waffles.
honestly, some people would take the spinach out from between your teeth. Hello, Muriel.
Hello, Clint, love. You all right? Hey, I see you waving your gun around again.
You'll never believe what I've just had to do. I was just waiting.
And now it's time for the On The Trot spot. Something to put in your ears while you go for your daily walk or your daily jog. And this one is really something you can stamp along to. Written by Mike Scott, it appeared on the Waterboys' first album in 1983. Go on, throw those feet of yours down on the pavement as hard as you can to A Girl Called Johnny. Now I'm introducing a spot that I call Try Before You Buy, where I read you a sample of a book that I've enjoyed. And if you like what you hear, then please do the author a favour and buy a copy.
Try
In 2011, the comedy writer Mark Wallington went on a tour of open mics in Great Britain, taking with him only his ukulele and a kazoo. And in 2012, he published a book about the experience, which was a book of the week on Radio 4 in 2012. If you have endured as many open mics as I have, then most of the book will ring hilariously true. And if you haven't, it's a funny book anyway, and I do urge you to get a copy. It's called, rather delightfully, The Uke of Wallington, and here are some samples from Chapter 1. "Open mic tonight," said the sign on the door of the Three Graces. "No poets." Well, you've got to draw the line somewhere, haven't you? I was standing outside, trying to convince myself this was a good idea. It was the first night of my nationwide tour, and I'd chosen the Three Graces because it was on the edge of town. It would be a forgiving sort of place. I could ease myself in gently. I walked in, and all eyes were on me. This could have been because I was a stranger in town, or because I had a ukulele slung over my shoulder. The barmaid said, "Open mic." There was still time to pull out.
"Jono!"
she yelled. A man with nose jewellery shook my hand and eyed the ukulele. His look was quite probably welcoming, but all it said to me was, "You do know that A, you're 30 years older than our average performer, and B, the last ukulele player we had in here got such a hard time from this crowd, he left his clothes on the beach and was never seen again." "Not seen you here before?"
"Just passing through."
Now he looked at me more closely, checking I wasn't some undercover poet who would jump up on the stage with a broken bottle in his hand.
"Banjo?"
"Ukulele."
"That's what I meant."
He checked his list of players.
"Be about half an hour. 3 songs, no filth."
Maybe I was being over-anxious and this was a friendly neighbourhood bar. The other acts weren't being jeered at or anything. A singer-songwriter was first up, and she sang with such a look of pain you knew she'd spent weeks carefully crafting each line of each lyric. Unfortunately, the sound system made her echo like a station announcer. Next came a lad who sang Springsteen songs with a bitterness that made his position clear.
"If only I had come from a broken home and my dad had gone to prison and I'd been bullied at school instead of being brought up in a liberal middle-class South Coast suburb with a neighbourhood watch sticker in the window, then I could write songs like this."
A man in a "Don't Tase Me, Bro" t-shirt played a Radiohead song.
"He always plays Radiohead,"
moaned the woman sitting opposite me.
"They all play Radiohead. If I ran an open mic, I'd ban Radiohead."
"I like him," I said. But I liked him simply because he was even older than I was. Then Jono played. He knew what the audience wanted, and he knew they wanted it loud. He cranked up the volume, and a police car slowed outside. The officer looked in, waved at someone, and moved on. I realised then that this was an entirely local do. The small audience, the musicians, the police, everyone knew everyone else. They came here every week and heard the same songs from the same acts, and that was the way they liked it.
"Are we ready for something a bit different?" called out Jono.
No one was going to commit themselves to that.
"We got a newcomer with a mandolin."
Many times that day I had thought to myself, "What you're doing is absurd." As I was packing my bags, while I was waiting for the train, as I walked along the Brighton seafront, and now as I stepped up to the microphone at the Three Graces, there was no need for me to be here.
This wasn't community service or anything. Nor was there any money involved. I was here voluntarily. I'd told myself that a nationwide tour of open mics would be an original way to travel the country. It would allow me to feel the nation's musical pulse. It would be the rock and roll tour I never had. It would also be fun. That's what I told myself. The audience seemed suddenly very quiet. I took a swig of water and had my first experience of the moment I would have every night over the next 6 weeks. The moment when I thought, this could go really well, or really badly. I said, hello, Brighton. This is Hove, mate, someone called back. Oh, is it? Hello, Hove, then. Right, Chuck Berry song. I launched into Roll Over Beethoven, and it was as if I'd thrown myself off Beachy Head, just hoping that someone would be there at the bottom to catch me. The great thing about the ukulele, and you have to understand this before you start to play one, is it's supposed to sound a bit rubbish. A rough approximation is what you're after. You've only got 4 strings, for heaven's sake. And yet, it's cool. Ukuleles are all-purpose and so easy to play that schools are starting to use them in place of the recorder. It didn't take long for me to realise here was the instrument I'd been looking for all my life. Songs that would have taken me forever to learn on the guitar, I could bash out on my uke with ease. Within a few weeks, I made my debut at a fundraiser for a new school bottle bank. This was followed by a performance at a New Year's Eve village talent show, in which I came 3rd, behind a drag act and a Norman Wisdom impersonator. After 2 months, I had 20 minutes of material. After 3, I was ready for the road. In the end, the Three Graces gig didn't go too badly. I didn't get a standing ovation, and I didn't get abuse, which was good because I couldn't have coped with either. What I wanted on this first night was indifference. I could build on indifference, and that was pretty much what I got. I remember concentrating very hard. I probably had the look of a man performing organ transplant surgery rather than a song on a ukulele. As I played the kazoo solo, I glanced up, and the expression on faces was mixed. Some were laughing. Some had a look that said, I'd rather be home watching Question Time. Some were thinking, I could do that. They had the relaxed look of an audience who had seen it all. I played a Nick Lowe song next, and forgot the lyrics a couple of times, and messed up the chord changes. But when I looked up, half of them were playing with their phones. I tried to say something funny. Thanks for bearing with me as I go through my ukulele and kazoo phase. But no one could have cared less. To finish, I played Route 66, about as ruggedly as you can on a ukulele. Someone sang Get Your Kicks on Route 66 at every chorus, which was nice and supportive, and then that was that. Thank you very much, you've been a wonderful audience. I meant it. Thanks to them, I wouldn't be going straight back home. As I left, I said to Jono, why no poets? He sighed. Poets just spoil everything. This was a new and strange world to me, but I would get used to it. I slung my uke over my shoulder and strode off down the road. No after-show party, no press interviews. I could have gone home and thrown a TV out of the window, but the friends I was staying with would have looked pretty poorly on that. The tour had begun. Next stop, Worthing. How rock and roll was that? Now it's time for another bit of a busk, because, well, there was I,
Sitting in my studio, sitting in my studio, a Monday afternoon-io. Oh dear. Or maybe not. So yeah, last Monday afternoon I was in the studio and I ran through the following. This one started out as the folk tune Ball of Yarn. And I monkeyed with the tune and then I gave it my own chords and my own words. And it's now called Her Imaginary Boyfriend. And here it is, going something very like this. She shaped him out of air. No one else could see him there. She spoke to him with butterflies inside. As she spun a tale of love, she the hand and he the glove. Her imaginary boyfriend smiled and lied. She saw him on TV as a man who braved the sea. She thought she was the object of his song. So she lingered in the yard, and with every sad charade, her imaginary boyfriend played along. His mind was rarely stirred, and he seldom spoke a word. He wore no vital organ on his sleeve, but in looking out for love, for a hand to be its glove, her imaginary boyfriend made believe. And that's all I've had time to knock together for you this week. I hope you've enjoyed it. If so, please make a date for the next one, my birthday special, Thursday the 23rd of April. In the meantime, keep a grip on yourself. Be patient, stay sane, safe and well. I made this programme for you, and I'm going to be here sending them out as long as you're there to receive them. Let's get through this. Bye for now. Cromford's assortment was conceived, assembled, and presented by me, Paul Cromford. I don't own the song A Girl Called Johnny, I just borrowed it to entertain you. Clint Eastworth appeared by arrangement with Malfeasance Productions. The Duke of Wallington, written by Mark Wallington, was excerpted and read by Paul Cromford. All incidental music throughout the programme, yada yada yada, Paul Cromford. This was a Paul Cromford production for you.